Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is November 11th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Before we get started, a quick shout out to all the veterans out there who may be listening. Thank you very much for your service. Happy Veterans Day to everybody, especially those who celebrated this day. Hope it was enjoyable. Obviously, the president gave remarks earlier today. President or Vice President Mike Pence was in Arlington Cemetery in Washington, D.C., So it's a holiday worth celebrating here in the United States. These men and women, most of them volunteered for their service. Of course, there are still many with us who were drafted, whether that be for Korea, whether that be for Vietnam. Even there are still some World War II veterans around. God bless them. You know, sometimes your name and number gets called up, and these individuals, these men and women, they showed up. They carried their weight. They served their country. And they deserve a salute, a handshake, and a thank you whenever you see them. It's not easy. War is not something that any one of us should want to witness. It is not something that any one of us should want. We got to pray for peace here. We have to. These endless wars have to stop for so many reasons. For so many reasons. Financial reasons, ethical reasons, moral reasons. It has to stop. This is the 21st century. We have to be a little bit more civilized than this. We just have to pull together, because right now what's taking place and all the things that we talked about yesterday on the week ahead segment, especially in regards to the global protests, things are not coming together. Sometimes it has to get worse before it can get better, I guess. That might be what we're in the midst of. But before we kick off this podcast again, thank you to all those veterans out there and happy Veterans Day. So the title of today's podcast is The Calm Before the Storm. This goes to my previous remarks in regards to these global protests. Despite the fact that it's not really calm in many parts of the world, I don't think we've seen the brunt of it. I think there's a lot more to go. Again, I strongly believe that this is not transitory, that this is history in the making. It's the weakest links that are going to go first. Despite the fact that the Bolivian president resigned yesterday, as we discussed on the Week Ahead segment, they're still protesting in Bolivia. They're still very divided in that country, as they are in many, many parts around the world. One thing, however, where you do see a lot of the overlap of all of these protests, regardless of their political persuasion, what party they might be associated with, everybody is sick and tired of the system. They are sick and tired of the politics. They are sick and tired of the cronyism. They're sick and tired of the fraud and the abuse. And I'm telling you, revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. The economics of all of this, it's coming home to roost. And it's always going to be those weakest links that feel it first. And I have to applaud these individuals, whether it be those in Iraq, Egypt, Bolivia, Chile, Hong Kong. Doesn't matter. You have to applaud these individuals, because they're standing up for themselves, they're standing up for their lives, for their families, for their countrymen, and ultimately they're standing up for themselves in regards to having the right to self-govern. They actually care about their government. Now, maybe they've been asleep at the switch for far too long. I'm sure that's true here in the United States as well, which is, I'm telling you, buckle up and get ready. It will come here. 2020 is going to be a roller coaster ride. We're going to talk a little bit more today. It wasn't a very busy news day, so we're going to follow up on some of the things that we discussed yesterday. Maybe wrap this podcast up a little shorter than normal. This is in the first or second inning. We got a long way to go. A very long way to go with these protests. Coming here to the United States, the roller coaster ride. Donald Trump wins again. Democrats are going to go berserk. They're going to go berserk. If Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or some other cuckoo nut should happen to get it, country could go berserk. Even if Joe Biden gets it, or maybe a Michael Bloomberg, somebody who's a little bit more centrist, the country might still go berserk. Because what's Donald Trump going to do if he loses? And this is, of course, assuming he gets through the impeachment. And we'll talk about that. Is he, Donald Trump, if he loses the presidential election, will he leave peacefully? Will he leave at all? Or will he say, my entire presidency has been hijacked by the Democrat Party, by the deep state. They're stealing this election as well. even though he won the first one, he still says, you know, 2016 was fixed, even though he won. But nevertheless, put that aside. Will he leave? Will he go peacefully? Will his base accept the loss if he loses? And I think it's really going to be contingent upon, if he loses, who he loses to. If it's a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, it could get pretty out of hand pretty quick. If it's a more centrist person, again, Bloomberg, Biden, maybe even somebody else who comes out of the woodwork, maybe it'll be toned down a little bit. And if Trump wins, if he wins again, and again, I'm still handicapping Trump to win if he can get through impeachment. If he can get through this whole process, I'm still handicapping that he will win with the current field of Democratic contenders. I just don't think they have it. Unless, of course, this economy really does roll over and all of the blame is put on President Trump. That could happen, but as it stands right now, if Donald Trump can get through it, I still imagine he will win. It's going to be very close. It's not going to be easy, but at this juncture, I'm still saying he gets through this impeachment process, he can still win in 2020. And if he wins, what are the Democrats going to do? Are they going to sit? I mean, look how crazy it's been for the past 3 years already. Almost 4 years, if you count the time that he was campaigning. People just thought, you know, this is just for show. He's not being serious about this. And there are some people who still believe that, that he just happened to win because people in this country were so fed up with the system. They said, hell with it. We're going to throw our hands up. Maybe this guy who has, you know, not the best history, but you know what? He's not the perfect vessel, but maybe he's what's needed. And we said, okay, let's give him a shot. That was my vote. I said, let's give it a shot. This system most definitely needs to be overhauled, but there is no real overhaul of the system taking place. And in fact, the swamp that is Washington, D.C., has gotten much more powerful over this time. The military-industrial complex has been given basically $2 trillion of our tax dollars over the past 3 years. Thank you very much. Major banks on Wall Street are making record revenues and profits. Thank you very much. Endless wars, despite some of the rhetoric, are continuing. Now, thank God we really haven't gotten involved in anything else, and I applaud the president on this and have done so consistently for quite a while, that he has not pulled the trigger to get us involved in a lot of other wars or escalating in other areas, which he could have easily have done. All of those drone attacks, all of those oil and gas tanker seizures, the whole myth, the whole story, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Yemen, whole host of things. He could have pulled the trigger. He could have said, I'm justified to do it. And his base is going to follow him blindly. So a good portion of the country would have been behind him if he had acted. I appreciate the restraint. Again, at the top of this podcast, we do not need these endless wars anymore. We can't afford them. They're unethical, they're immoral, and we got to do better than this. But what's going to come down the pike? Because another thing that I've always warned here, regardless of who's really the president, if you know what hits the fan, if all else fails, take them to war. It's a great distraction. If you can create a boogeyman, the country is divided as we are, could maybe pull together, put all of those political divisiveness aside and say, we got to rally as Americans and we got to go fight XYZ. That could happen. History is a guide on this. So it's something to be on the lookout for. So that's that. We'll get more into the impeachment stuff here in a little bit. The markets here in the U.S. were relatively flat for the day. If those of you who are paying close attention to these markets, there isn't a lot of intraday movement. I mean, maybe there is if you're watching it tick by tick, minute by minute. But net-net, most of these moves happen in the overnight sessions. So if you're somebody who's trading the futures market, you're probably better aware of what I'm saying. But if you're looking at these markets on an overnight basis and you see the Dow gapping up, going up 100 points, 50 points or whatever, that's what it does. And then that it just kind of hangs out there throughout the trading session during normal trading hours. If it gaps down, which it really doesn't do anymore, but if it gaps down, that's where it stays for most of the day. And it's much more in a tighter trading range. Since the Federal Reserve has announced non-quantitative easing, the markets have just been going up, up, and up. That's all they've been doing. If there's any pullback, it is extremely minor. And then all you have to do is wait for a headline. And that's where these markets are. They're just waiting for headlines. Because it's not earnings growth. And it's not really revenue top-line growth either. Last article I read on this, S&P 500, you got earnings up about 3.2%. I'm sorry, you have revenue up about 3.2%. But you have earnings, profits, shrinking by about 3%. So what's going on here? Yet you still have the market rallying to all-time highs. Well, it's the funny money. It's the Federal Reserve. Printing money, doing quantitative easing, putting the pedal to the metal, increasing their balance sheet over the past couple of months by almost $300 billion. And it's going to get there very quickly, $60 billion a month. $100 billion a night in the overnight repo market. Nothing to see here, folks. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Everything is under control. That was all the way back in September. That was 2 months ago. 2 months ago already. It's hard to believe. We've been talking about it this long already. And there's no end in sight. It's going to continue, the overnight stuff, at least until January. And we know that non-QE, $60 billion a month, is going to be printed at least until the first, maybe second quarter of next year. And we know that they're going to cut interest rates again. How many more times? We'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens with the stock market. If there was a big sell-off in the stock market, well, of course, Daddy Jerome Powell is going to come to the rescue and cut interest rates again. But you have to be careful, too, because we talked about this. 2020 is a presidential election year. Does the Federal Reserve want to seem like it is doing the president a favor by cutting interest rates to give support to the stock market for a full year? For a full year, because this time next year, we're going to know who the president is. Now, whether that individual is somebody that the country is really behind or not remains to be seen. But this time next year, for all intents and purposes, we will know who the next president of the United States is going to be. Is it going to be Donald Trump, or is it going to be a Democrat, or maybe somebody else out of the woodwork that we don't yet know? This remains unknown, but the Federal Reserve probably does not want to appear political, although that's all they are, despite the fact that Donald Trump continues to tweet and badmouth the Federal Reserve. He wants them to cut interest rates even lower, go into negative territory. We told you what this will do to your savings. Do you care? A lot of his supporters don't have any clue, so they don't know. And he wants quantitative easing. Well, he's getting his wish. He's getting his wish. The Fed cut rates 3 times. We're doing quantitative easing. We have real negative interest rates in this country. How much lower does he want them to go? This is all an attempt to juice the stock market at any cost. Not because revenues are growing. They're up 3%, okay. Not because earnings are growing, because they're not. They're shrinking. So what is this all on? A bunch of funny money. A big con, a big charade. Is that what we've come to here in this country? Is that why we celebrate Veterans Day? All these men and women can go risk their lives so they can come back to a con game? To a shell game? That they weren't fighting for patriotism? They weren't fighting for the Constitution? They weren't fighting for their brothers and sisters in this country? Nope, they were just fighting for ExxonMobil, Lockheed Martin, Boeing. That's all. Just the American Empire. Assets, oil, natural gas, minerals, somewhere else in a foreign land where they speak a foreign language where we don't give a damn about them. Is that all it's come to? Is it all about money? Is it all about profit? Is it all about greed? Where is the humanity? Apparently it's nowhere. And Donald Trump does not do a very good job when it comes to empathy and humanity. In fact, he wants the pedal to the metal for this con and for this game, this charade, to continue. I thought he was supposed to drain the swamp. $2 trillion to the military-industrial complex. Banks making record profits. Aren't they, by definition, the swamp? I think we did a good job here at the Capital News with our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, describing who the swamp is and how they operate. I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, they are just fine right now. I mean, look at the companies that have a back door to the government, or the government has a back door to these companies to collect all of our personal data. Look at how well Apple is doing. Look at how well Microsoft is doing. Facebook, Amazon, Google. Ring a bell? Those are the companies, by the way, that have led this entire rally. Coincidence, you think? Just keeps going up and up and up. Because all you have to do is manipulate a handful of stocks, a handful we just mentioned, and this market can continue to climb higher and higher and higher. Despite the fact that you had the protests in Hong Kong, that of course are continuing, entering their 6th month, we stated yesterday on the Week Ahead segment that an individual was shot point blank by a police officer. There was also a man who was caught on fire. Some protesters, I guess they poured lighter fluid or gasoline on this individual and then hit him with a lighter, and he went up in flames. He is also in critical condition. This violence is not going to solve anything, and in fact, it's going to eventually force the hand of President Xi and the Chinese Communist Party to intervene. And if they intervene, it will be with the military or with a very strong and brutal police force and police presence from mainland China into Hong Kong. All trade deal, any hopes of that will be completely off the table. Completely off the table. That could be the catalyst. That could be something that comes out of left or right field, although it's now somewhat predictable if it happens. So that wouldn't really be something that comes out of the woodwork. But that could be the catalyst that just tips this entire global economy over. Because I think that's what the markets are waiting for. They're waiting for the catalyst. They think it's 2008 again. They think there needs to be a Lehman-like collapse in order for this whole thing to come tumbling down. I don't believe that personally. I think if there is that type of collapse, well, then most definitely that will give way and this thing will just avalanche and snowball and further and pick up momentum because there are so many dominoes in place and we go over all of those things all the time. Remember very early on in this podcast, February, March, for those of you who have been with me, and we've talked about these points repeatedly throughout as well, but that list of 30 economic and financial concerns, those market risks, the 30 market risks that we went over one by one. This was a list that was put together by Deutsche Bank at the end of 2018 for things to stay focused on for this year. And we're going to have to go through that again to see which ones have come to pass, which ones are still out there hanging, which ones are pretty much done with. We went through them or they're just really nowhere on the horizon. And which ones do we need to add to that list? It's going to be an interesting experiment to see how far we've come in a year, if we've come that far at all to begin with, because so much has simply been glossed over with money printing from the Federal Reserve, from the ECB, from the Bank of Japan, from the People's Bank of China in particular. But there are others as well. Australia's doing it. Canada's getting ready to do it. We just said the Bank of England, we might have to cut interest rates too. Surprise, surprise. Surprise, surprise. India has been doing it. I mean, pick a country, any country. They're all playing the same game. There is no leadership. There is no humanity. There is no truth. There's basically no justice as well. It's just, come on, central bankers, print money like it's going out of style, because that's exactly what's happening, and that's why you have to stay diversified. That's why you have to be in a little bit of everything, because you don't know where all of this money is going to end up making its way. Maybe it will be in the stock market. Maybe it'll be in the bond market. Maybe it'll be in commodities. Maybe it'll be in precious metals. But you better have a little bit of everything. Better have some cash, too, because if and when this thing comes down and the piper gets paid, it's going to be the sell of a lifetime. The question is, are you going to have the cojones to step in and buy real estate when there's blood in the street? Because you're supposed to buy low and sell high. We are making all-time highs. What's the risk-reward payoff right now? Do you think this? I mean, you want to bet a hand on a melt-up, on a blow-off top? Good luck. Good luck. I hope you're successful if that's what happens. I hope you can squeeze out another 10, 20%. Good luck. Some of my portfolio will also take that run up, but I am not 100% invested in this market. I'm just not going to risk it. The risk-reward scenario right now is not worth it. We're at all-time highs, and I think we're on very shaky ground to begin with, because this isn't on anything fundamental. This is on the hopes that central bankers, some of the most corrupt and idiotic individuals on the face of this planet, are going to solve this riddle, that they're going to continue to play this game and everything's going to be A-OK. I don't put my trust in them, so I'm not going to put my money betting on them to do it. Because this isn't like saying, well, Apple's just going to continue to make money, so I'm going to bet on Apple. Can't do it. You can't pick any stock out there and just rely on the fundamentals for what I think is going to happen. Because these prices can collapse very quickly. Very quickly. So the only things that were moving these markets today, at least on the Dow, was Boeing. Boeing is up 4.5% today on news reports that Boeing may start to deliver their MAX 8 737 airline in December. And then there's some other reports that have been circulating over the past couple of days that maybe some European regulators are going to allow the plane back into the air to be operational in the first quarter of next year. All of that remains unknown, but those are the reports. That's the headline. That's what the market has been looking for. Boeing is one of the largest companies in America, part of the military-industrial complex. Be very surprised if they allowed that one to go down. But we still, I don't think, are completely out of the woods, but up 4.5% on the day. Another stock worth mentioning is Walgreens. Yes, your local pharmacy, corner store pharmacy. There are rumors out there that a private equity firm is going to be buying Walgreens and taking them private. I guess the market liked that. Shares were up 5%. If it wasn't for those two stocks, the markets probably would have been down a little bit more than what they were. I mean, the S&P was down a little bit, NASDAQ, Russell 2000. The Dow was really the only one that inched out a gain, and that wasn't much to write home about either. So we'll see what happens. Again, President Donald Trump will be giving a speech tomorrow before the Economic Club of New York. Markets are on pins and needles. So again, is this sort of the calm before the storm? What is he going to say? Is he going to try to juice these markets and tell everybody that everything's okay, even though there's no deal? A month ago, we were told by the president in the Oval Office, it doesn't matter where he is. He will lie. He will exaggerate. Okay? It doesn't matter where he is. In the Oval Office a month ago, we got phase one. We just got to iron out a couple small things and we're going to sign. That's it. Fantastic, beautiful. Well, there's no signing ceremony because that was canceled because of the Chilean protests. But nothing's been rescheduled. Nothing's been agreed to. You had the Chinese propaganda last weekend. We talked about that. Oh, yeah, there's going to be a deal. In Washington, D.C. and Beijing, we're going to roll back tariffs. Nope, not happening. At least not according to Peter Navarro and President Trump. Larry Kudlow thought, yeah, well, there's going to be some rollbacks. Nuh-uh. Spoke up too soon, Larry. You spoke up too soon. What this tells me is Larry Kudlow is aware of the data points that we discuss here on a daily basis. And Larry is getting a little nervous, and I can understand why. Peter Navarro's an idiot. He doesn't realize this, doesn't care either. Got to be tough on China at all costs. No return. And remember, folks, if there is a phase one deal, all it does is takes us back to where we were 2 years ago. Wow, congratulations. Congratulations. Makes no sense whatsoever. But that's all that might come of it. We get back to where we were 2 years ago. And when was the last time we heard any real discussion on the real meat and potatoes of this whole thing with the intellectual property, the IP theft, cybersecurity, all that stuff? Forced technological transfers. We don't even hear about that stuff anymore. It's just farmers are going to need more land, they're going to need more tractors, and you're going to sell more soybeans than you've ever sold before, which of course is not going to be true. And it'll take a year before you even know if that's true or not. Can't make it up. What else do we have? Brexit news. Nigel Farage, the founder of the Brexit Party, has declared that the Brexit Party will not be contesting seats in Parliament that are currently held by the Conservative Party. Before, Nigel Farage was saying that the Brexit Party was going to be challenging everybody. Now, he's done a 180, switched it up a little bit here. The Brexit Party is not going to challenge or contest the seats that are currently held by Conservatives. Of course, they will contest the seats that are held by the other parties that comprise Parliament. So this is sort of a little tip of the hat to Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who is expected to win the election, along with the Conservative Party and probably the Brexit Party as well. Of course, there will still be a lot of members in Parliament from the Labour Party and a handful of others as well. Right now, what you have is basically with the Labour Party, you got Jeremy Corbyn is their leader. He's sort of akin to a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren here in the United States. And of course, Boris Johnson is akin to Donald Trump. I don't think the UK is ready for somebody like Jeremy Corbyn. But you never know what's going to happen. You never know. It's a month away. 12-12 is the election over there in the UK. Anything could happen. Perhaps Nigel Farage will change his story again. I doubt it, but there would have to be probably something pretty rattling for him to change his tune and say, yeah, we're going to contest everything once again. So this is probably sort of an olive branch on behalf of Nigel Farage to Prime Minister Boris Johnson to say, okay, chances are Conservatives are going to win. Brexit Party is going to pick up a considerable number of seats. We're going to have to form a nice alliance here. So we'll keep you posted on that, but I just want to let you know that that was somewhat of an update today. Again, we have testimony that is going to take place this week in public hearings. Bill Taylor and George Kent on Wednesday, Marie Yovanovitch on Friday. You already have Donald Trump coming out again on Twitter pretty aggressively today, sticking to his theme song, read the transcript, phone call is perfect, where's the whistleblower, all that stuff. You also have some Republicans out there, particularly Senator Lindsey Graham, saying that unless and until we hear from this whistleblower, this whole impeachment thing is it's a sham. I'm not buying that argument at all. We've had this discussion before, but I'll refresh your memory, especially for those of you who may be new to the podcast. This is akin, this is an investigation. So the whistleblower is pretty much akin to an anonymous tip to a police hotline. So if you're an anonymous tipster and you're calling up a police hotline, you're saying, well, look, I don't have firsthand knowledge of this, but I've heard some conversations of some people who I find credible, and what they're saying concerns me. Let's just say for the sake of argument, it concerns some, you know, gang-related activity, and I imagine that it's going to be revolving around some drugs and some weapons. And I just don't want this to happen in my community. Here's the community. Here are maybe some other names of people you can go talk to maybe find out if this is true or not. Thank you very much. See you later. Okay, thank you for the call. Okay. Maybe some police officers are sent out to this community. Maybe detectives are sent out to this community. They rattle some cages. They talk to some informants that they have in the area. And they figure, well, you know what? That tipster was correct. There seems to be some truth in this. There's a big drug deal going on. It seems to be the case. They go back. They report this to their lieutenant or their captain. They say, okay, boys, let's open up a formal investigation in this. Let's get some other units involved. And they investigate. A little bit more hands on deck. Now you really start investigating, asking questions, getting some witnesses, getting some people to answer some questions. And you find out that there's something going down. Now, what are the police supposed to do? I would think they're probably going to get together to raid one of these houses or to catch these guys in the act. Now, they go to court. What's the defense attorney going to say? Well, you know, we heard that there was an anonymous tipster. Unless he or she comes and testifies, this whole thing's a sham, Your Honor. You gotta call this thing a mistrial. This whole thing is off. We can't proceed here. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. If what the tipster said was true, if all of that evidence is there, if you have other witnesses, that's what you got. Now, it might be nice to have the tipster. It might be nice to have the whistleblower. I have been consistent with this. I would have liked to have seen and would still like to see the whistleblower come forward. And then you may ask yourself, well, why didn't these other people who are now testifying, why didn't they come forward as whistleblowers if they were so concerned? Well, we addressed this before too. That is a major life decision. You are going to be attacked by the government. There's almost no doubt about it, despite the fact that there are protections. Ask a whole bunch of whistleblowers how those protections protected them. Ask how many people, some of them, went to jail. How many of their lives were ruined financially? Maybe their whole families, because of all of the stress and the whole situation, maybe some of these individuals lost their family. They lost their pension. Lost their jobs. Going to have a very difficult time, if and when they get out of prison, of finding employment. Your entire life can be turned upside down. It's not taken lightly. And when you have a president who is caught behind closed doors, basically saying, you know what we used to do? This is like spying. Remember what we used to do in the old days when there were spies? Basically alluding that we killed them, that they were assassinated, they were executed. That's not good rhetoric for a country that's on the verge of civil war or at least some major riots and protests. If people can wake up out of their, you know, Prozac comas in zombie-like states, there are going to be protests and riots here. So it's not good. And when you have a lot of these witnesses, these members of the State Department, of the Defense Department, aides, former aides to the president himself coming forward and saying, yeah, we really didn't like what was going on here. This is not good for Donald Trump at the moment. It's not good. And when your defense from your own party, especially from Lindsey Graham, saying, well, we need the whistleblower, otherwise the whole thing is a sham, that's ridiculous. And Lindsey Graham knows better. He knows better. And Donald Trump is doing his hardest to divert attention from all of these transcripts, to divert attention from these public hearings, and say, read my transcript, which is not a transcript because it's not verbatim. And in it, he is asking a foreign government to investigate his political rival. Now, that in and of itself might not rise to an impeachable offense. We've had this conversation, but I said it warrants investigation. And when you have all of these people coming forward, making these claims that this seemed more politically motivated than it did about policy, this is problematic. Now, in the president's defense, all of these people who have testified, at least from what we know so far, not a single one of them have heard the words come out of Donald Trump's mouth that this was the order, that this was going to be the stated policy of the United States. All of these individuals caught wind of this after the fact. But still, it's Donald Trump's decision at the end of the day. And the only other person or persons who would have been involved in this decision-making process, from what we understand now, may have been Ambassador Sondland to the European Union, Rudy Giuliani, and maybe John Bolton, because everybody who is sticking by the president right now, who have yet to testify or who have defied subpoenas, their argument has not been made under oath. So if and when these individuals are called forward, whether it be in these public hearings, whether it be in the Senate under a trial, if it goes to that far, which it likely will, what are they going to say when they're under oath? Are they going to stick to their story and defend Donald Trump with what he is saying? Or is it going to be something else? A lot to say. A lot of unknowns. Despite all the volatility, despite all of the unknowns, I'm still saying this is the calm before the storm. The rest of this week is going to get interesting. We're going to see what Donald Trump says tomorrow before the Economic Club of New York. Jay Powell will be testifying this week before the Senate panel and a House panel. Everything's fine, folks. Don't worry. Smoke your cigarette. Take your Prozac. I'll see you here tomorrow. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.